Okay, so today we are opening a source file that looks a little different than our usual stack of papers.
Yeah, definitely not the typical policy brief this time.
We're doing a deep dive into just one piece of narrative material, a really charming children's story called The Coat Cubby That Came Alive.
Right. And our mission today, well, it isn't just to enjoy this story, though it is enjoyable. We're looking at the brilliant engineering behind it, you could say.
Engineering, I like that.
Yeah, we're analyzing how this story, which is aimed squarely at, kids age 3 to 8, how it successfully embeds these really crucial life lessons, things like responsibility, organization.
Respect for shared space, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a masterclass in using storytelling for behavioral reinforcement.
It really is. We're extracting those pure, clear nuggets of wisdom. The narrative structure is the lesson here, in a way. So let's unpack this. The story starts on the first snowy morning of December. We're at Maple Hollow Elementary.
And the author immediately gives us this strong sense of place, very comforting. That's key for young listeners, you know.
Yeah, the hallway smells like cinnamon cocoa and wet mittens. That detail, it really pulls you in.
Incredibly evocative. It sets a stage that feels safe, familiar, which is important because it makes the magical thing that's about to happen feel less
It
scary.
makes it more approachable.
Okay.
So Mrs. Willow's class lines up at these long, creaking wooden cubbies. You know the drill.
Oh, yeah.
She gives them the classic instruction: put your things away neatly. The kids dump their coats, their boots. But then, as soon as that classroom door shuts,
The atmosphere shifts, and that's where the story's sound design, even just on the page, kicks in. They hear this very distinct sequence.
rustle, shuffle, pssst.
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
brilliant, actually. The sound tells you something is active, something's hidden. It makes you lean in, makes the kids in the story lean in.
It sets up the core mystery right away. And Mia, one of the students, she voices what they're all thinking. The cubby just whisper.
And boom, there's the personification. That's the mechanism that really drives the whole lesson forward.
Out pops this little wooden face, button eyes made from coat hooks.
Which is such a clever detail, right? Integrating the cubby's actual function, the hooks, into its features. Very smart.
And we meet our central character, who seems a little distressed. This is Cubbins.
Not just any talking cubby. He's the self-proclaimed keeper of coats, guardian of gloves, protector of his CO.
Ah, the sneeze.
Yes. And that sneeze, it's crucial. It results in this puff of glittery dust.
Right.
For a child reading, that immediately signals, okay, this isn't just a talking box. This is something special, maybe magical. It gives weight to what he's about to say.
It also suggests maybe that even magical things can be affected by, well, mess. Or maybe just have allergies.
Yeah, perhaps. But it definitely makes him someone worth listening to.
And I find that immediate personification really interesting. It turns this inanimate object, the cubby, into a being with feelings, with a job to do.
And Cubbins explains, you know, he can talk, but nobody's listened for years. And he's really unhappy because he literally can't do his job properly.
And the story is very specific about why he can't do his job. It's not just general messiness.
No, it's the specific types of clutter that are preventing him from functioning. That's important.
Right. The kids are cramming the cubby full of mismatched mittens, half-eaten granola bars, and then the detail that really clinches it.
The snowball.
Yeah, Cubbins asks, "Wait, is that a snowball in your pocket?" And Max sheepishly pulls out this melting snowball.
It's the perfect piece of evidence. It's the literal embodiment of damp, destructive carelessness.
It really illustrates the consequences, doesn't it? In a physical, visible way.
Absolutely. For teaching kids, this is key. A sticky granola bar makes a mess, okay? But a melting snowball, that actively ruins the warmth and dryness that Cubbins is supposed to provide. It shows disrespect for shared space has real, tangible effects.
But I wonder, like, is the first motivation just fear? You know, this talking cubby caught them. Does the story give them a reason to care beyond just not getting in trouble?
That's a really good question. I mean, initially, yeah, a talking cubby popping out. That creates some tension, maybe a little fear.
Sure.
But the narrative shifts pretty quickly away from, punishment and
Yeah.
towards functional necessity. Cubbins delivers his so what moment.
Which is.
He basically says he can't keep their things warm and safe if no one respects their cubby. So the lesson gets framed as this mutual relationship.
Ah, okay. So Cubbins needs respect to do his job.
And the kids need Cubbins to do his job to protect their important winter stuff, their mittens, their hats.
So care equals function. Care equals safety and warmth.
Exactly. That's actually a pretty profound link for a 4 or 5-year-old to grasp, but the story makes it clear.
That makes sense. It's not framed as, you know, you were bad. It's the system is breaking down because it's cluttered.
Precisely. It stops working for everyone involved.
And the kids' reaction is great. They don't just say sorry.
No, they immediately switch into problem-solving mode. They come up with a plan. Cubbins Cleanup Day.
And that's the pivot, isn't it? Where the children take active ownership. They're not just being told what to do.
Right. And the cleanup part itself is critical because it's not magic. It's not instantaneous.
No, the source is specific about the steps they take. It shows responsibility and teamwork in action.
We see these concrete, manageable steps. They organize gloves into pairs.
Which, let's be honest, as any parent knows, can feel like a Herculean task
Oh,
sometimes.
definitely. They hang the scarves up neatly. They even sweep the cubby floor. For the young listener, this models the actual process of tidying up.
It makes the goal seem achievable. It's about systematic effort.
Not just wishing the mess away. And I like that detail about pairing the gloves.
Yeah, me too. It reinforces that organization isn't just about shoving things out of sight. It's about making them useful again, reuniting things that belong together.
Well said. And the narrative provides an immediate reward for this effort.
Yes, when they finished, the cubbies wood gleamed, and Cubbins, he beamed with pride.
That immediate positive visual result, it powerfully reinforces the behavior. The cubby looks better, Cubbins feels better. The external matches the internal feeling of accomplishment.
So the narrative structure really demands a payoff here, and it's not a small one. Cubbins says he'll show them a secret.
And this is where the story elevates, I think. It goes beyond just a simple lesson about being tidy. It becomes something, more resonant.
The cubby doors pop open, revealing a hidden shelf.
And like you hinted at, it's not filled with candy or toys, which might be the predictable reward.
No, it's filled with dozens of these tiny, beautiful snow globes.
This is the symbolic genius that, as adult readers analyzing this, we need to appreciate. What do the snow globes represent?
Cubbins explains they are the children's happy moments, things like sledding, building snowmen, laughing together.
Think about that. The clutter was half-eaten food, melting water, things that decay or cause damage. The reward is preserved, beautiful memory, captured moments of joy.
Wow. It directly links the mundane act of cleaning your cubby to preserving happiness.
Exactly. Coven says, when you care for your space, it keeps your memories bright.
That is such a powerful abstract concept, but it's delivered in a perfectly digestible format for a young child. A snow globe is something they can understand.
It connects their internal well-being directly to external order. The message isn't just be neat because I said so.
Right.
It's more like be neat because doing so allows me, your environment, to protect and cherish the parts of your life that matter most. Organization becomes the key to unlocking this hidden joy.
Not just a chore you have to do.
Not at all.
So the class cheers, naturally. And
Yeah.
the story confirms, you know, they kept the cubbies tidy from then on. They internalized the lesson.
But I love this part. The author adds that little touch of realism.
Ah, yes, well, almost no one.
There's still the occasional rogue mitten.
That rogue mitten,
Nice
it's the
name.
human element, isn't it?
Totally. It grounds the magic just slightly. Reminds us that, behavioral change isn't always perfect. Maintenance requires ongoing effort.
Even after a magical cubby gives you snow globes, we all have that rogue mitten or sock
Yeah.
somewhere, even as adults.
Absolutely true. It makes the story relatable even after the main cleanup. So for us, the adult learners doing this deep dive, the key takeaway is how masterfully this story uses personification and symbolic reward.
Yeah, to teach organization, responsibility, and the value of taking care of shared spaces.
The specific nugget here is that caring for your physical space demonstrates respect and responsibility. And in return, the space doesn't just get clean.
It actively unlocks everyday magic. The payoff is tied to preserving something good, like memories.
It's that mechanism we're analyzing. The tidy space acts as a catalyst, revealing this hidden emotional reward, which inevitably leads us to ask.
What does this mean for us, for you, the listener, navigating a much more complex adult world?
Right. We've seen how a messy physical cubby stops Cubbins from working properly, and symbolically, it dulls happy memories.
So, if that holds true for a wooden box in an elementary school,
What are the messy cubbies in our own adult lives? The ones that might be draining our well-being or hiding potential joy.
okay, well, the obvious ones are like our desks, our digital files, that inbox with 10,000 unread emails.
Those are definitely candidates. But let's push the metaphor like the story does. What about relational cubbies or maybe temporal ones?
Temporal cubbies. like our schedules.
Exactly. That calendar crams so full of obligations, there's absolutely no space left for spontaneity or even just quiet reflection.
Oof. Yeah, that sounds like a schedule cubby full of half-eaten granola bars and melting snowballs.
Yeah.
It's preventing something good from happening.
That's the critical application, I think. When we declutter our digital world or our physical workspace, or even that jam-packed calendar, we aren't just aiming for neatness.
We're making space.
We're making space to preserve function, preserve memory, maybe even preserve joy. We're tidying up our personal operating systems in a way.
So maybe that hidden shelf in your grown-up cubby doesn't hold literal snow globes.
Maybe not. Maybe it holds an unexpected hour of free time that suddenly appears. Or the mental clarity you need to actually enjoy a moment of peace.
Or just the ability to find your keys in the morning without a frantic search. That feels pretty magical sometimes.
Huh. It certainly does. The point is, these small acts of organization, physical or temporal or digital, they can have these disproportionately large, almost magical returns.
So consider that maybe the secret to unlocking a bit more peace or function or even joy in your own life.
Might be hidden right inside one of your own cubbies, just waiting for a bit of a cleanup day.
Consider the magic that might be revealed when you organize your own spaces. That's our deep dive for today. Definitely gives us all something to think about tidying up.
Indeed.
We'll see you next time.